You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Did you go to the Sebastopol Farmers Market today, the first day? It is. Oh, my gosh. It's August 1st. It's the kickoff of the August Gravenstein month. And today the Gravenstein was featured at the Sebastopol Market. And it will be featured at a Sonoma County Farmers Market once a week through the end of the month. We talked about that here on Mouthful last week. Today we're going to talk about something really fun. Francis Ford Coppola Winery. I was up there last night. It's been open, or I guess the main part of the winery opened 6 days ago. They've had the temporary tasting room, which was really, really a nice place. But I was up yesterday to see the tasting room and to have dinner at the new restaurant. And today I'm really, really pleased to welcome Corey Beck, who is winemaker.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's great. And I'm just going to ask you to get a little bit closer to the microphone.
Sure, absolutely.
And we can turn it so that you don't have to stare into space. But you'll sound better the closer you make that microphone your very best friend. So how long have you been with Coppola?
This is my 13th harvest. I started in 1998. Came from Chateau Montalina. And, so I was there for 4 years.
Okay.
And then
Were you on Mouthful for Chateau Montalina?
No.
Years ago? Okay.
No,
I had
no,
them
I wasn't.
On many years ago.
Did you? Probably Bo Barrett.
Well, there were two or three people who came over from the winery.
So, I worked there until 98 and then left and started with the Coppolas in 98.
So you started in Rutherford?
I did. I was there for 8 years with Scott McLeod making Rubicon. And we started the Diamond Series in really the late 90s when I came aboard. And then in 2006, Francis and Eleanor wanted to separate the estate and keep Rubicon over in Rutherford and only making Rubicon, and then, you know, the Diamond Series having a new home in Sonoma County. So that's when we bought Chateau Souverain in 2006.
Okay. And it's been a long, not really that long, I guess, but it's been taken a while to have the remodel launch.
It
and
has.
So the first
been.
Phase, a portion of the first phase has launched. Is that right?
That's correct. It feels like a long time. I will tell you. I mean, we bought it in March of 2006, and for the first 18 months, it was getting permits, and that was the big battle and the hurdle into what Francis wanted to do, and Francis's vision of it. I mean, it's a beautiful facility, as you know, and in fact, it was in production in 1972 is when it was built,
right? And Gary, he kept that original footprint.
He did. He kept the original footprint, and he loves the chateau, but like so many things that Francis does, he wanted to put his signature on it,
as he should.
Absolutely. So. The tasting room is open now, like you said. The tasting room in Rustic, the restaurant, which we opened on Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So we've been. But one of the wonderful things about it is that we took over on a Monday in March in 2006, and Foster's, who we bought it from, moved out Sunday night. And we were in on Monday and open. And so Francis never wanted to close. He always wanted to have, and it's part of who Francis is. He wanted to be life and life around the winery and to be like we're open. And so not only did we move into the tasting room that Monday, then when we started demolition, we opened the temporary tasting room and never missed a day.
Yeah. And you know, that temporary tasting room was a treasure.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It was such a sweet place to visit. I was there several times, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're blessed because we have a full visual team that support the wineries. And so they came in and worked their magic. And most people that came in to taste said it was one of the most beautiful tasting rooms in Sonoma County. Just
I agree.
Temporary.
Yeah. So. And it was – well, partly it has that spectacular view.
Yes.
So, you know, that view is just can't be beat. But also, you could tell somebody thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
And
no,
it was
absolutely.
Just, it was done really, really well.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very, it's special. Special place.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk about all the wines, because standing there yesterday, looking at the shelves at the tasting room, there is a lot of vinification that's going on.
We do.
Yes. Mm. There is a lot. And there's a lot of different labels.
Yeah.
And throughout the show, I'm going to go through that, but I'd like to go back to Rubicon first.
Sure.
And let's talk about what Rubicon is and what Rubicon does wine-wise.
Yeah, so Rubicon, so Francis and Eleanor bought a portion of the Gustav Niebaum property, Inglenook, back in 1975. And it was
long
after
time ago.
That was. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, Francis has been in the wine business for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it always didn't make money. So that was the other thing. It was the film career that supported the wine business.
Mm-hmm.
So Francis, you know, one of the early friends that he had was Robert Mondavi in terms of coming over and talking about the property and what should I do with this wonderful estate. And Robert Mondavi really influenced him on making wonderful Cabernets throughout, you know, throughout the Napa Valley. And so you basically said, look, you have this wonderful property. Cabernet is king in Napa. And so this is what you should start doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1978 was the first vintage of Rubicon. And Francis, you know, it was the river that Caesar had to cross. And it was basically Caesar saying, you know, this is the point of no return. And that's why Francis named it Rubicon.
Now, was it always called Rubicon?
Yes, the first bottling.
Okay, the bottling, but the estate was called Niebaum Coppola.
That's correct.
Right?
It was Niebaum Coppola, and so, you know, just like Francis wanting to pay homage to Gustav Niebaum, who founded the property in the late 1800s, which it was Inglenook at the time. It was 1879 was founded, so one of the very first wineries in Napa Valley. So Francis wanting to pay homage to Gustav Niebaum, he was the Finnish sea captain, and so it was, you know, it was Niebaum Coppola for years. And then when we decided to buy the Chateau Souverain in 2006, that's when Francis said, okay, this is going to be Rubicon Estate. So what makes Rubicon so special? It's 230 acres of Rutherford Bench land, and it's 100% organically farmed as well. And I don't know if a lot of people know that, but the Coppolas are really, really into organics. And so it's been certified since 1994. So a long time.
Oh, long time.
Yes, absolutely. Long time.
And there was a year, I can't remember now, when it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes. So that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he, the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, and about
A year, I can't remember now. When it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes. So that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he, the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, and about
A year, I can't remember now. When it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes. So that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he, the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, and about
A year, I can't remember now. When it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes. So that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he, the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, in about
I can't remember now when it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes, so that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, in about
I can't remember now when it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes, so that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, in about
I can't remember now when it was, you'll know, when he reunited another piece of property.
Yes, so that was 1995. So
was that long ago?
1995 is when he reunited the properties. And so what he the original purchase was about 1,400 acres in 1975. So then we'll fast forward 20 years to 1995, and the front half of the property came up, which was the Inglenook Chateau, in about part of his inspiration to keeping them.
As I said, when he bought that, when he made that second purchase,
yes,
to reunite the estate, he threw a fabulous party.
He did.
I was there.
In the one in 95.
No, but the second purchase, the one when he did a library tasting of Inglenook wines.
Yes.
And then moved over into the barrel room when they had the Asian carpets stretching the length of the room and tables end to end.
Yeah, so that was the 25th anniversary.
Okay, that's
that was the 25th anniversary that we had, that we did a special tasting of all of the, a lot of the old Inglenook wines.
Right.
Plus then some older vintages of Rubicon. Oh yeah, that was a beautiful
party. One of the best parties I've ever been to.
It was a beautiful party.
And I still remember walking up that gorgeous staircase.
Yes.
Magnificent. But walking up that gorgeous staircase and you turn and there's the car.
The Tucker car.
And there's the desk.
Yep.
From Vito Corleone's desk. But there was also the case with three costumes from Dracula in it. And it was the first time I'd seen any of that. And I had loved that movie. I still do love that movie.
Great movie.
But that movie made a huge, huge impact on me. I actually wrote a food column. I mean, I was writing a food column at the time called Jaded Palette. And I managed to stretch the parameters far enough that I wrote a whole column about that movie. And I'd seen it up in Portland, Oregon. Actually, I think it was my first night ever in Portland, Oregon. And I got there early enough. I went to the movie by myself. It was across the street, and had a wonderful dinner at the Heathman Hotel afterwards, and woke up about 4 in the morning to do a TV show, and looked out and it was snowing.
Oh wow.
And I was up on about the 6th or 7th floor, and no one had driven on the streets yet, so you just had this brand new snow and these the almost golden streetlights shining down on it. It almost looked like it could have been a scene from London during Dracula.
Oh, sure.
So that was really memorable to see those costumes. And one of the things I find really thrilling about the new winery in Geyserville is that the movie paraphernalia has been moved over.
So we have the Dracula set, which you saw
yesterday. The Dracula
set,
and then, which is right there where the bar, the main bar is.
That's right.
Before you go into the restaurant Rustic.
That's correct, yes. And then there's also two new Apocalypse Now sets as well. So
those
are brand new.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. They'd never been shown before.
Never been shown. No, you can see the water skis. We had the surfboard and some of the other things. So
yes.
those are
a
brand
cage,
new.
Yeah,
that's
a cage.
Right.
The pile of skulls.
The pile of skulls. Oh, yeah.
I've spent a long time looking at that.
Yeah. So there's some new twists that we have up there. And then when you walk into the north room, which was the old tasting room, there's the Tucker car.
There's the car, and you can walk up and again a beautiful staircase.
Yes.
With this metal filigree between the steps, and I that caught my eye and it caught the light beautifully, and I thought, God, even down to a detail like that, it's beautiful.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned the staircase at Rubicon, and that, and just to tell everybody here, which I think when I first heard this, he has he actually brought the wood over from Belize and built the staircase with wood from Belize.
Really?
Yes. And
so that wasn't an original staircase?
No, that was...
I had just assumed that it was.
No. There was a spiral staircase in the corner, and so that was Francis's. So when his vision was, is when you walked into the chateau, he wanted this grand entrance. And so the staircase, as you know...
He got it.
He sure did. Yeah. And there's not one nail in the staircase. No. There isn't. I mean, so the detail of just those little things of what Francis, what he envisions is, that's how it is. Yeah. So.
Well, before we take our first musical break and actually start talking more about wine, let's finish about what we see when we go. Because when you go up to the second floor on that beautiful staircase up in Geyserville, there's a huge case with all of the Oscars.
Yes.
The five Oscars. Right there.
Yep.
And some great photographs.
Godfather desk.
And then next to it was one of the most interesting cases, I thought. I mean, it was great to see Oscars and Golden Globes and that beautiful little Berlin film festival award, just all the awards. It was great to get to see them close. As much as you may see something in print and on television, it's just not the same as actually seeing the real thing. But then in that next case, on the other side of the Godfather desk, the original screenplay of The Godfather, and then a sheet out of a notebook of the different people who were considered for different roles. Olivier's name was under Marlon Brando's.
That's right.
Dustin Hoffman was there in the section that looked like it was for Michael Corleone.
Yep.
So that was just, I could have read every single word in that section. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that's where Francis, again, has an eye for certain people and actors, and has a vision for it, and he pick and choose a lot of different people for those roles.
Yeah, and it's just to have that sort of what's the right word, paraphernalia, just seems like, I don't know, I guess that's what you say, but all the stuff that's connected to something that became so iconic in our culture. I mean, The Godfather, think about even The Sopranos TV show, and all of the references in that show to The Godfather. I mean, and there's just references to that all the time. So I think it's so intimate to see them in this winery setting.
Oh, yeah. Well, what makes it special for me, and I know a lot of the other winemakers as well, when we're out on the road doing winemaker dinners, every single time somebody, usually a male, will come up and start reciting lines from The Godfather, either Godfather 1, 2, or 3, usually Godfather 1. So it's incredible. It really is. And then we start talking about the wine. But like you said, I mean, Francis made such an impact with the movies, especially with Godfather, early on.
Yeah. So why don't we take a little musical break, and we'll be right back, and we'll start talking about wine and food, too. You are listening to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. We are talking about the brand new Francis Ford Coppola Winery. And let me just put this out there right up front. If I sound like an unabashed fan, it is because I am. And I am thrilled that we have him here. I've never seen anyone who seems to just embrace and love life like he has, and I'm glad we have his creative energy in Sonoma County. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, it's infectious when you're with Francis. Again, this is my 13th year with the company, and he has such a penchant for life. He and Eleanor both. I mean, it definitely is a team effort, and they both have this wonderful penchant for life, and a lot of it stems from the arts. And then a lot of with Francis comes from the food side of it. And so when we as winemakers are looking at building wines and making wines, we're always cognizant of the food side of things. And I'll tell you a quick story. This is a great story. It was my first year with the company in 98, and I started in March, and Francis's birthday was in April. It's April 7th.
Okay.
So he threw a birthday party at his house. This is, again, in 1998. We had 35 employees at the, with the winery at this time. So he invited all 35 of us to come after work. And there's Francis at his house making pizzas for everybody and serving Rosso and Bianco. And he made it very clear to me and to the rest of the staff that this is how he envisions wine and food and family and friends. And I still to this day, I tell that story and I get such a smile on my face that, you know, this person that's larger than life is sitting there making pizzas and we're enjoying Rosso and Bianco and singing songs and playing games and laughing and it was wonderful, and that's how he still is today. And we, and you can see you were up there yesterday. It is about enjoying life, and that is really what Francis wants to portray. Is that it's a family atmosphere. Of course, we have a beautiful winery, but then also the food to go with it as well.
You know what it reminds me of, and only part of this, of course, is realized yet because there's still several stages that will be completed over the next few months and year or so. It reminds me of what the North Bay, or particularly Northern Sonoma County and Northern Napa used to be, which was family resorts. Even before there were automobiles, when people were taking horse and buggies up here. And then after that, there were family resorts. People came, to take the waters. They came to relax and hang out on the Russian River. In fact, I came when I was either 2 or 3 years old with my mother and my sister, and that's what we did. We spent 2 weeks on the river, and it was a family resort.
Sure.
And as we've become, as we've gone from wine country, I mean from the Redwood Empire to wine country, I think that the family friendliness of it dip down for a while, and you know, not a lot of wineries have been real kid friendly. It's just like you schlep the kids along and hope maybe there's a lawn where they can run around while you taste.
Right.
So I really think in a lot of ways what Francis is doing with this new place is bringing back a part of our history that has been all but forgotten about. I think it's just great.
Yeah, well, I know I appreciate it. I have two small little children. So we're always, when you vacation, I mean, you obviously you need to think about all of those things. And the place that Francis has created is, the envision is that when people come, you know, not to leave is that, you know, mom and dad can order a pizza and have a glass of wine and the children can go and swim if they choose.
There'll be the two swimming pools.
That's correct.
And there'll be a game, sort of a park-like area with bocce and other
bocce
games.
We have four
bocce courts.
Yes, and then we have a band show. And
right.
So we will do, you know, Francis envisions and we're going to have, you know, puppet shows and readings and different, you know, we're going to have the jazz festival come, the Sonoma County Jazz Festival, working with them. So yeah, it's about entertainment.
And puppet shows, that's so great.
Oh, yeah, for the children.
And there's a dance floor, too, there, right?
There is, that's
yes,
correct.
Yes, that rocks, a dance floor.
So yeah, there's a vision for the entire property for that. So and one of the beautiful things, too, I was standing there the other day looking out towards across the pool to the northern side, and you're looking off to the band show, and you look beyond the band show, and you cannot see another structure anywhere. The vision, I mean, it's if you, you think about that, is where we live, and you everywhere you look, there's you can see a house. You can't see another structure. It's remarkable.
Great.
Again, going back to Francis's vision and how he sees and what he views.
Yeah. So. Will he spend much time there?
He's there a lot.
Yes,
he has taken this project, and he's not currently right now not working on a movie, and the last one he did was Tetro.
Right.
And this was really part of the movie side of things, and from what he said. I mean, it is directing and making sure that this opens with exactly what he envisioned. So he has spent a lot of time there. And, you know, again, a lot of times when we're on the road, people ask that question, well, how involved is Francis? And it will tell you, he and Eleanor are extremely involved in our company.
It's not a vanity project.
No.
They're just there.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Everything that, in terms of all of our labels and the graphic, the art design, all goes through Francis and his team.
That's a good place to go now, is all of the different labels. there's, I can think of what, Diamond, Director's Cut, Sophia, and then Santi?
The new one called Santi, with the wraparound, yes.
The most breathtaking label. When I was there yesterday, I was with a friend of mine who is a dye, he makes dyes.
Die cuts, yes.
Yeah, he makes them by hand. He's, one of the last two west of the Mississippi who designs hand-cut dyes, and he was looking at this label, and his mouth was just, had fallen open.
It's pretty spectacular.
It's amazing. So what does that mean for the person who's not a wine geek, who walks into a winery expecting to taste Francis Coppola wines, and they see all these different names and labels, and some labels without names? Let's break it down to them. What is there?
Yeah, so we'll break it down into tiers. And so the first tier, which is the lower tier, retails for about $10, is called our Presents line. And it's Francis Coppola Presents. And in that line is our Rosso and our Bianco. Mm-hmm. And that is what Francis envisions as your everyday red and table wine.
Your table wine.
That's right. And then that's where, and Francis, you know, when he's, like I said earlier on, when he had, when I started, he threw a birthday party, and that's what we served, because mm-hmm. that's what he envisions. So that particular line started in the mid-90s. Then comes our Diamond series. In our Diamond series, the signature wine in that series is the Black Label Claret. And actually, Gustav Niebaum made a Black Label. It was called Gustav Niebaum Commemorative Collection. This was back in 1912, was a Black Label. So Francis, again, paying homage to Gustav Niebaum. And now we have the golden net that goes around. I don't know if you saw it yesterday.
Oh, yes, the golden net.
Yes, and so Francis, a couple of years ago, wanted to upgrade the look and the packaging.
So that's part of the Diamond.
That's right. That's part of the Diamond. That is the focal point of the Diamond series.
Okay.
And we actually had to purchase a netting machine from France. And that all as it does is it nets that product for us. So we put it in line to the bottling line, and that's what it does. So,
and how many wines in that?
We have 14 different labels within the Diamond series.
Oh, really? Okay, yes. So 14.
And those are wines, really, for the consumer. They're varietal wines from California. And those are, you know, like our Diamond series, Chardonnay. We have a Pinot Noir, a Merlot, Sauvignon Blanc. So those are really just the Diamond wines. And for the majority of it, we try and have those as on-premise wines throughout the country, which means for restaurants.
Okay.
That side of it. So then we have when we purchased the winery in 2006, Francis wanted to look at, you know, he asked me, he said, well, when you think of Sonoma County, what appellations do you think of, and which wines would you want to start with? And so, you know, naturally you start thinking, well, here we are in the heart of Alexander Valley, so Cabernet. So we started.
Now which series is this?
This is the Director's Cut.
Director's Cut, okay, right.
So this is the Director's Cut. And so Francis wanted something that really kind of brought the film and wine career together.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've seen that label, and it actually does a full wraparound twice.
Uh-huh.
And that is, boy, I'll tell you, that
was.
Was
that is the image of a zoetrope?
That's right. It's the original zoetrope, and it's actually the size of the original zoetrope. And if you walk into Rubicon, Francis has three or four of the zoetropes on display, and it is the original size, that strip that goes into them. So it's
now, for people who don't know what a zoetrope is, let's tell them.
So it is the instrument that brings moving pictures or still pictures to life. And so you put your little strip in and you turn it and spin it.
And it spins.
It spins around and it brings still pictures to life. Yeah. It is really the best definition.
And upstairs near the case with the handwritten notes about The Godfather, I think in the next shelves you can buy a couple of different zoetropes, kids' toys.
That's right, you can. That's right.
Yeah, so, I thought that was really cool.
Well, when Francis, you know, when he brought this idea to us of making a full wraparound label, and nobody had done that. And that's part of what Francis kind of comes to as well, is that he brings us and he challenges us. And so we actually bought a machine from Australia to put this full wraparound label on the bottle. And so most people, when they see it, they just look and say, how were you able to do this? And we did it, you know, and it's a stunningly beautiful label. So the Director's Cut wines really represent Sonoma County. So we have a Russian River Chardonnay, we have an Alexander Valley Cabernet, a Dry Creek Zinfandel, and a Russian River Pinot Noir. So really the best kind of what we see from the different appellations. And then we have our Francis Coppola Reserve series, which you saw yesterday, which will do there is we'll take from the different vintages, we'll take the best lots mm-hmm. and make a reserve. And it could be any different vineyard mm-hmm. from any given mm-hmm. year.
And what labeling is that one?
So those, what you saw yesterday are the portraits or the hand painted.
Okay, yes, the portraits.
Yeah, so Francis's good friend, Dean Tavalaris, who worked on many different sets with Francis, those are his mm-hmm. drawings that he's done. So we have six of those in that series. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other series that we have is Sophia. In the Sophia line, which has done remarkable for us. And I will I'll tell you a funny story about this. It was in 1998. Francis was, Sophia was getting married in 1999, and Francis wanted to make, and he always had promised to make a sparkling wine after Sophia. And so mm-hmm. he emailed us, the winemakers, and said, okay, I want you to make a sparkling wine named Sophia, and here are the parameters. You can make it anything you want, but I don't want Chardonnay in it. They're like, okay, well, no problem. So we went out and sourced a little Pinot Blanc and some Muscat and a little bit of Riesling. And it's kind of like a Prosecco style.
Very Except it's floral completely dry.
It is.
It's not sweet, which bless you for that.
It's not. It's not overly sweet. That is correct. And so it's a Prosecco style. So it's light, it's fresh, it's fruity. So we made a few cases for the wedding party back in 1999 and, keeping our fingers crossed that everybody loved it. And so after the wedding festivities, Francis sent an email out and said, oh my gosh, everyone loved it. I want to make this for production. So uh-huh. we still to this day make a little bit. So the Sophia line has been a great line mm-hmm. for us.
And I enjoy Sophia Sparkling. I also really like the rosé.
The rosé. That was also a new product for us a few years back. Uh-huh. But then we had the challenge in 2002 of putting the sparkling wine in a can. And did you see the 187 little cans that we have?
I didn't.
So we actually have, it's a pink.
I think I know about them,
the Sophia
though.
Mini. Is what we call it. And so, again, a challenge that Francis brought to us. And, he always said, people, why can't you just want a glass of sparkling? And so with it, we actually have a little straw that goes with it. And so you insert the straw, and we have a tiny little 187 milliliter. It's the same product in the bottle, but yet in a can. And we've had an amazing success with this. And it's been around since 2002.
And where do you find it mostly?
Usually it's at resorts, in places that it's perfect for places that can't serve glass by the pool.
Oh,
it's wonderful.
Sure. Yeah.
You have a Sophia Mini with a straw. So it's been a really good success for uh-huh. us.
And so you have in the can all of the Sophia wines.
So we no just the sparkling,
just the sparkling,
just the sparkling.
Okay.
And then we have the rosé in the uh-huh. in the bottle, and then we have the Sophia Riesling as well.
Oh, that's right, making. And that's one I haven't tried. I haven't tried the Riesling.
Yeah, and the box is the Tiffany blue color. I mean, very striking, mm-hmm. beautiful.
And the bottle's a beautiful shape.
It is.
It's a very feminine shape.
Very feminine shape is right. Yes, it is.
Yeah, really pretty. So have we gone through all of the tiers?
Then we have...
There's more to come.
Well,
we
have the Sante tier.
Oh, that's right, the Sante.
That you talked about.
The amazing label, that's right, the Sante tier.
Yes, so very feminine again. Mm-hmm. And in that line, we have a Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir and a Sonoma Coast Chardonnay. Just two wines. And that was, again, trying to do what Sonoma County does really well, mm-hmm. Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And that is also a wraparound label.
Yeah, and what was the inspiration for it? And to describe this label, it's filigree.
Yes.
It's this very intricate, beautiful filigree.
Yes.
What mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Where did the information...
Francis really wanted to make a feminine wine, mm-hmm. not only the wine, but then the package as well. Mm-hmm. And so Avoltra Sante is the name of it. And Francis's grandmother spoke four different languages. And Avoltra Sante is French to... Mm-hmm. To your health.
To your health.
To your health. And so at every family function, she would say, a votre santé, and raise a glass, and to your health. And so that was part of the inspiration for this. And again, I think it was also to Francis knowing that we just purchased the machine that did the director's cut label wraparound. So we have the machine to do it.
It was
pretty funny. But it is a beautiful package.
It is.
Goes relatively slowly on the bottling line because you can imagine spinning this around.
Yeah, and the placement must be really difficult.
That's right. So it's but it is it's a great product mm-hmm. For us.
Mm-hmm. What sort of we talked about the price points, the prices on the first tier, the Francis Ford Coppola Presents. But what sort of price does it, as we discuss them, does it move up in price?
Yeah, so we have the diamond. Yeah, so the diamonds roughly are in that $14 to $17 range.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then with the director's cut is the mid 20s.
Okay.
Sophia is around the $18 range.
Mm-hmm. And then we get up to
Reserve. Then reserves are around the $30 range.
Uh-huh. And then how about Avoltrasante?
Avoltrasante is around the low $20 range for the Sonoma Coast. And so with the new winery, we also launched a new wine called Archimedes. And I don't know if you saw that label yesterday. But yes, Archimedes is a new blend for us, the 2006, and it is a Sonoma County Cabernet, and that retails for about $50, and it is using the best grapes from Knights Valley and Alexander Valley.
Oh, Knights Valley.
Which is a great spot.
Amazing spot, Knights Valley.
So I tried to coax Francis into that because I grew up in Knights Valley.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I
don't know anyone who grew up in Knights Valley. That's amazing.
I grew up in Knights Valley. Yeah, I did. In fact, I grew up on the property that Joe Montana is selling now for $49 million. So
wow.
I was part of... I grew up on that property. It was great. We had 800 acres to run around as kids and play. So it was terrific. But so, yeah, Sonoma... I mean, Knights Valley has some of the best... Mm-hmm. Growing region is one of the best growing regions for Cabernet, and so we use quite a bit for this new product, Archimedes.
Archimedes, and it's the 2006 vintage. That's
2006 vintage.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Okay. Well, that makes sense of it.
Yeah, that we have quite a few, and that's part of what you know with Francis and the creative side and the creative team is that you know we have a lot of different labels, but there's always an inspiration behind each one of them, and it's not just a new label to create a new label. There's an inspiration.
There's heart to each one.
There is, yeah. And I'll give another funny story about one of the labels and how kind of things happen at our winery in the Diamond series. Francis, he was working on his movie Tetro, and he was in Argentina. He was in Buenos Aires. And it was a Sunday afternoon. I'll never forget it. And this was in 2007. And he's emailing me saying, I'm sitting here in Buenos Aires drinking an amazing Argentinian Malbec. You know, how come we can't make a Malbec like this? And so, you know, Sunday afternoon, pick up the emails, I email him right back. Francis, you know, we can. We use a little bit of Malbec in our claret. So he said, well, I would like to make a Malbec in the Diamond series. Email back, and we go back and forth about 20 minutes. And so in the 20-minute conversation over email, not only were we going to start sourcing Malbec for this new diamond wine, Malbec, but he had already sourced and made the color of the label, which is that celestial blue, which is the color of the Argentina flag. So the Malbec now within the Diamond series has this celestial blue, very bright, beautiful blue, which if you look at the Argentina flag, it's that
there
same
it is,
blue.
Yeah.
So the connection, and it happened over about 20 minutes.
20 minutes, yeah.
And so all of a sudden that launched our Malbec, and we are one of the larger Malbec producers in California. Now,
where are the grapes from?
Most of those grapes come from Monterey. We get quite a few from Monterey, and then we get a little bit from Lake County. Not a lot of people grow Malbec.
Right.
But more and more people are. We've actually twisted some arms and had some people plant some over the last few years. And it's a wonderful varietal. And I said, we're one of the larger Malbec producers now, all from Francis having...
I had no idea. That's great.
So those are kind of how things are done at the winery. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Francis, again, will have a vision or something behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's how it comes about.
And it just like that.
Yeah.
And that's how so many great things come about.
That's right.
Yeah. And in that just moment of inspiration.
Yeah, and people get it. They see it. They're like, "Oh wow, it's that Argentinian blue," and so it's quite fun.
That's a great story. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
It's Mouthful. We're talking about everything going on up at Francis Coppola Winery. I am here with the winemaker, Corey Beck. Now, you just named more wines than I can possibly count as you talk about them. What sort of winemaking team do you have?
We have a great team. I have we have five members on our staff, and each of them have a different series. And so there's a woman named Sandy Walheim who takes care of the Sonoma County side of it. There's a gentleman, Francois Cortez, who just started with us, and he and Don Labor take over the Diamond series. Tondi Bolkin, she's on board, and she takes care of the Sophia side of it. And then I get to, you know, probably create and help as much as I can, or in some cases maybe don't help, depending on how they're feeling. But yeah, so each of them has really their own little side of it. And then we have a grower relation, which I think is probably the most important part in the wine business.
Sure.
Her name is Lise Asmont, and she's in charge of all of our growers. And we have about 100 different growers that we work with in Sonoma County and throughout California. Mm-hmm. And our goal is always to create a relationship with the growers. And so, for example, so if you're a grower, and let's say you're growing Chardonnay for us, and you deliver the Chardonnay, we make this wonderful Chardonnay, we ferment it, it's over, harvest is over, and we invite you back in November or December, and we sit you down, and we taste your Chardonnay, and we explain to you exactly what we did with those grapes, what program it's going into, and we give you a bottle of, let's say you're growing Russian River Chardonnay, we'll give you a bottle
of
the
director's
cut. You
really should say, I'm growing Russian River Pinot Noir,
okay. So, but we'll give you a bottle, and so that you feel part of the overall experience in the process. And
I think it's not just a business cold business transaction.
No. Absolutely not. Yeah. It really isn't. It is so that they can, when they have friends in town, bring them to the winery and say, look, I grow for this product. And that's important for us.
Yeah. Now, do you ever see yourself moving into vineyard designates with that?
We do, and that's where the Francis Coppola Reserve comes into.
Uh-huh.
And so for each of those products that we make, we get to select one of the great vineyards or the great areas for that particular vintage. Mm-hmm. And we get to highlight it. And, you know, we'll put the grower's name on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a wonderful synergy between, we're trying to create between the grower and the winemaker. Because a lot of times wine, you know, growers had in the past for different wineries, will, you know, they'll drop off their grapes and they'll kind of wipe their hands clean and, okay, we'll see you next year.
Yeah.
That doesn't work that way at Coppola. Uh-huh. It's a team effort. It's a family.
And then what about what is grown there?
So on the estate, we have a majority of what we have is Cabernet. And so, you know, Alexander Valley is about Cabernet. Uh-huh. And so the majority of what we have is Cabernet on the property. Uh-huh.
And that goes into the blends.
It does. And those will typically go into the director's cut, which is the Alexander Valley Cabernet. So we have about 25 acres around the property that we source from.
So now we're going to move on to food and the restaurant that has been open 5 days.
5 days. Oh, yes. So the restaurant is called Rustic, Francis's favorite, favorites. And there are, you know, different recipes and different influences that he's had throughout his life in different places. And I think you were up there yesterday and you said you had the Florentine steak.
Yes.
And so
It was a porterhouse? Like, hugely thick, but aged really beautifully. That was one beautiful, tender, succulent piece of meat.
And it was cooked on the parrilla. Which was the grill. So that was which is inside. It's where the fireplace used to be.
It's beautiful too.
It's gorgeous. It is. Oh yes. So we had professionals from Argentina and from South America who actually worked and know what parrilla grills are, help install it, and it is done correctly.
So. It seems like if you're looking at the menu, right in the center is Francis's favorites,
yes.
And eight or ten dishes.
Different ones, yes.
And everybody, if you've been to Paris, if you were one of the people who ate at La Mie Louis, the potatoes are there.
The potatoes are there.
The potatoes are there. They didn't have them last night, but they are there. They will have them sometimes. And also Moroccan lamb.
Yeah, the Moroccan lamb. Yep.
But right now they're rotating them. They don't have everyone every night.
That's right.
So they didn't have the Moroccan lamb and they didn't have the potatoes last night. So we had the steak. But around that, so you have, like, right in the center, you have Francis's favorites. Around that, it seems to be the Italian foods that you really associate with Coppola.
And one of the mainstays is our pizzas.
Yes, pizzas.
Is where, and one of the things that I've come to know and appreciate about Francis is that, you know, Francis has a few resorts in South America.
Right, he's got the one in Belize.
He has two in Belize.
Oh, two.
Blancano and Turtle Inn. And then we have La Lancha, which is in Guatemala. And at those resorts, you can get the same pizza that you could get at Rustic. And that's one of Francis's signatures is that, you know, he wants the pizza to be exactly the way that he envisions it. So you can get a great Illy Espresso and you can have that same pizza. And so it's terrific.
You know, another thing that's on the menu, and I'm really curious about why, is a muffaletta.
I had that the other day. I had that sandwich the other day, and that was what Francis, he wanted to have it.
He likes muffaletta?
It's exactly.
And muffaletta, of course, is the classic sandwich of New Orleans.
Of New Orleans. So, yes. And actually, the bread comes from New Orleans.
Oh, it does.
It does.
The Yeehaw.
The bread comes from New Orleans.
And so do you serve it hot or cold?
It's cold.
It is cold.
It's cold, yes. Yeah. And I ordered a half, and I had to take half of that home.
If you order a whole one, you have dinner for a family of eight.
Yes.
Just about. I mean, it's... A muffaletta is huge.
It is. Yeah. So I ordered a half and had to take half home. But yeah, the bread does come from New Orleans.
Oh, that is really, really good to know.
Yeah.
I will use that information in various places frequently.
But yeah, so if you look at the menu and the things, and too, things are really reasonably priced as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you look
absolutely.
At, yeah, so, and that was also part of it. Francis wanted to make it very, you know, consumer, kid-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful kids menu. In fact, I brought my four-year-old up the other day, and he ordered off the kids menu. And when he was sitting down, you know, the server came over, gave him a little juice cup, plus crayons and something to draw on. So, you know, again, very kid-friendly.
And the restaurant's open from, 11:30?
So 11 to 9 daily.
And menu doesn't change. It's the same throughout.
That's right. And like you said earlier, some of Francis's favorites, you know, may or may not be on, especially in, you know, when we opened 4 days ago or 5 days ago, we didn't know quite what to expect.
And you opened, I was really impressed that you opened very quietly.
Yes, we did.
Which is smart, but... The word was out by last night. That play, I felt sorry for people because obviously they're still getting their sea legs as they should be, and they were slammed.
Yeah,
they
were
absolutely slammed.
Again, not knowing what to expect. So, but it's good. I mean, I hope that everybody, you know, walks away from there and is an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the other thing is too is that Francis, the way that the tasting room is situated, the self-guided tours is, you know, you get a glass of wine or a tasting, and like you were saying about the staircase and where the Tucker is, you know, you walk around, you go up to the top, there's another bar upstairs, and so it's really a very seamless flow to it, and have just your self-guided tours.
Yeah, it's a great place to hang out. But the bar just before you go into the restaurant,
yes.
How did Francis get a full liquor license? There's got to be a story.
Well, we had the liquor license from Palo Alto at our restaurant down in Palo Alto.
Okay.
Yes. And so when we closed that a couple of years ago, that was we had that and transferred it up to the to our new one.
Oh, no. I didn't know you could transfer through that great a distance.
Okay. So we had that, but then there was also a drawing that needed to take place. That was part of it.
What do you mean?
A drawing for, so each
year.
A lottery.
Wow.
And we were selected for that. So we still have the liquor license because, you know, you don't really ever want to sell those. I mean, they're golden. So we had the one down in Palo Alto, and then we were in a lottery for the one in Sonoma County, and we actually got drawn.
We
did. Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. So we got drawn for the liquor license.
I was astonished when I saw that it was a full bar.
Yeah. So you can come in and, you know, and that's part of it because the tasting room closes at 6.
Right.
So for those people who want to come and have dinner and sit at the bar and have a martini or, you know, I mean, a glass of wine, whatever they choose, they can have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was the bartender was interesting to watch last night. He was making some things I'd never seen before. Grog was one of them.
Oh yeah, grog was on there.
He's making a grog, and it's like, wow, that was fascinating.
Yeah, a lot of those drinks come from Francis.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what to expect when everything is complete.
Sure.
So we're going to have the two swimming pools.
Well, it's actually one swimming pool.
Okay,
it's
but
an
connected.
H. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of an H-shaped, but one very large swimming pool. Yes.
When do we have a sense of when that might open?
We're looking at this fall.
At this fall.
Yeah, so later this fall.
Maybe we'll have
fall.
Summer by then.
Gosh, I hope so. I know. We've had a really cool July. It doesn't feel like summer.
Which is
I like the fog, so I'm not complaining, but it would be nice.
We've only had a couple of days of over 100, so yeah. Usually by now we've had 6 or 7, so yeah. it's been cool. But so what to expect? So the swimming pool.
Sometime in the fall,
the swimming pool. We have our 28 cabines or cabanas, right. Which are the small little changing areas.
And you reserve those.
That's correct. And so a family can come. There's a shower. There's a place to change in there. We also have, for the public, if you choose not to have a cabine, you can have, there's a public shower and changing room as well. We have 4 regulation bocce courts. In fact, we are working with the Bocce Confederation now to have regionals and different playoffs up at our place, hopefully starting some bocce tournaments. So they are 4 regulation.
And when will those open?
Those are going to open again. Everything will open on the outside together this fall.
Oh, okay.
And so all of it is kind of being done now in conjunction.
And when you're walking up the stairs,
yes,
and there on the to your right is where the pools will be. There's something shaped like a carousel.
That's our outdoor cafe.
Tell us about that.
That's a poolside cafe.
Okay.
And so if you don't want to have lunch at or dinner at Rustic, and the poolside cafe will be open for lunch. You can grab a burger. You can grab a pizza. Sit out there. Sit outside. There's going to be there's going to be stools all around. You can also have, if you're sitting by the pool, full service to have either the poolside cafe to serve you.
Awesome. And then if you look a little bit sharper, make a sharper right, turn your neck a little more, there's a structure sort of round with a pointed roof, I think.
Yeah, so
is that a lifeguard stand? What is that?
No, that's actually for the that's the elevator, Jeff, for the elevator, for our ADA.
Oh, wow.
Yes, so yeah, that's so you have the elevator on that side, which will take you up to the top. So yeah, that's, and then beyond that is the band shell.
Oh, so the band shell is right beyond that.
It's just beyond that. That's right. So the band shell is just beyond that. So that one big structure that we that you saw as you came in, that's where the band shell is.
Oh, for some reason, I was picturing the band shell further.
No, it's directly. Okay. It's just directly beyond where the elevator is.
Okay.
So, but as you walk up for the main staircase, you have your guest reception area. And then you come in and you can check in and do what you like for the day.
So there's a concierge desk.
That's right, the concierge desk as you walk in. And so from there you can inquire about all the different things that we're going to be able to offer. And
how much is it going to cost to spend the day swimming?
As of right now, we don't know. Yes, when we opened, Francis had talked about having the pool for free for a certain period. And so as of right now, we're not quite sure how that's going to work. Yeah. So just trying to figure that out.
You got a lot. It's a huge project.
It has been. It's been a wonderful project too. It's been something too. And I will say during the times that we've been in, the economic times, we've employed a lot of different people up at our facility throughout the 2.5 years. About 3 months ago, we had a job fair and we hired 130 new people.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been really great. It's been great for Sonoma County and it's been good for the region and for everybody.
I think it's a fabulous addition to things. I think it, even though it's a really big project involving so many people, there's something very intimate about it. And that just has to be Francis's touch.
It's well choreographed, is what I can say. It really is. And that's due in large part because Francis being on site a lot and making sure that everything is going to his satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. So for now, you're open 7 days a week.
7 days a week.
When does the tasting room open?
So the tasting room opens at 11.
Okay.
And then that closes
11 until 6.
11 till 6. That's correct. 7 days a week. And I think you said you were up there at 5:30 yesterday and it was full.
It was packed.
Busy. Yeah.
Oh my God, it was packed.
So, which is a good sign. We're very happy people. And again, the way that it's set, the goal for us is to make sure that we can treat and give everybody the same experience and talk about our wines, talk about the Coplas, so they all walk away with the same exact experience, which is memorable.
Yeah. Well, I think you've achieved that. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what it's like when it's not the tourist season.
Yes. Our goal, too, is with the restaurant, too, with just quickly, only 85 per, or 15% of the wine list at the restaurant Rustic can be our wines.
Okay. Now, why is that?
Because of TTB laws.
Okay.
So 85% of the wine list has to be other people.
Yeah, I knew it was. I knew that it was, but I didn't realize it was a law.
That was a percentage. So what we did is reached out to all of our neighbors and to make sure that all of our neighbors, all of our growers that have labels, that we're supporting them. And so that, you know, you're hoping that during the slow season in February and March that the neighbors are coming up and growers are coming up and enjoying their wines. And so, again, going back to family, communal side of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I expect, I mean, for me, I wish there was shuttle service. I wish I could get on the subway in Sebastopol and end up there.
And end up there, that's right.
But I still intend, in fact, I'm coming up with my grandson sometime soon. He's 9 years old.
Oh, wonderful.
And since he was four, he has wanted to be an actor.
And still to this day.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And so yesterday I was going to buy him the two zoetropes. And I thought, you know what? It's better to bring him and let him decide he wants them and then I'll buy them. So,
oh,
you know,
he
feels that little bit of power.
Sure.
But he knows The Godfather. I mean, he knows movies. He's seen Dracula several times. I mean, he can. You ask him about a movie and you better be prepared to sit down because he will tell you the entire plot.
So he's serious.
He's very
that.
Serious.
Oh,
so I'm going to take him up and I think I'm going to make sure he's seen The Godfather before. I think he has, but I want to make sure that he has. And so then he can just see. And I think that'll just make him feel like, wow, this is so real. It's not some distant thing. It's real.
No, I can do this.
Yeah, I can do this. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. Yeah. On that note, Corey Beck, winemaker at Francis Ford Coppola Winery. It's been a thrill. It's been a real pleasure. And
thank
I just
you,
wish you the best 100 times over.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
You bet. And I will be here next week with another episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. Have a great week.
To the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. Some good cornbread. Now listen to